Hello, 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 and welcome back to another episode of This One's For You. I'm your host, Ellen Noble, and I am absolutely thrilled to have you here with me today. Our guest today is someone truly special. And if you listen to this show a lot, you know that I say that every single time, but y'all, I really mean it. I'm so fortunate to get to chat with so many incredible guests on the show, and today's guest is no exception. So without further ado, please welcome Rach McBride, a professional triathlete and gravel racer based in Vancouver, who is still competing at an elite level in their mid-40s. Today, we'll discuss Rach's incredible longevity in endurance sports, their experience coming out as non-binary, and their journey advocating for more inclusive policies in racing. From overcoming injuries to discovering their true self and identity in the world of sports, Rach tells a story of finding purpose in life, work, and in some of the toughest races out there. Through it all, they radiate resilience, determination, and acceptance. So, no matter who you are or where life has taken you to this point, this one's for you. Now, let's jump right into our conversation with Rach. Rach McBride, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Ellen.
I always say this, I'm thrilled to have you on here. I guess to begin, my most burning question that I just want to start out with is, where in the world are you right now?
Right now, I am at home in Vancouver, BC, Canada.
Do you live like in the city, or is it it's an island?
No.
Victoria is an island.
Vancouver Island is the island that Victoria is on, and I live across the water on the mainland. That is Vancouver. And I live, I would say, like, pretty much in the city. I live in a neighborhood called Kitsilano, which is like a little bit fancy pants. It's like not really my style, but it's really good spot for training. So I'm like 4 blocks from our 150-yard pool in the summer that's like right on the beach.
That's so great.
Like just close to running trails and getting out on the bike and everything. So it's a good spot for me.
Yeah, I feel like, especially if you're doing 3 disciplines a day, or,
yeah,
you know, 3 disciplines in a week, the proximity probably goes a long
way. Yeah, logistics is really tough when you like, especially with pool time, you know, getting to a pool and like, and I don't like running on pavement, and so having like softer terrain to run on instead of like neighborhoods, like running through the streets, yeah, it's great.
So I guess with you race 70.3?
Yeah, I race mostly 70.3 and Ironman. I'm still trying to figure out the Ironman, how to successfully race at the longer distance.
Yeah. So 70.3 is a half Ironman, right?
Yeah, 70.3 is a half Ironman. So it's like a 1.2-mile swim, 56-mile bike, and then a 13-mile run.
Yikes.
And then Ironman, it's hard, is like twice that.
That sounds like so much. And then you think about doubling it. I can't imagine. So when you're, this is like not like relevant at all, but I do find it so interesting, is so like you're running on dirt a lot to train for running on the road in your triathlons, right?
Yeah.
Is it like more of an idea that like you can get like more longevity out of running on softer surfaces, or is there an issue of that kind of like specificity of like not running on the same surface? Like, is that ever an issue that you don't like to train on the surface that you compete on, or is that not really how it works?
It's mostly about saving my body. I've had a lot of running injuries throughout my career. And so anything that I can do to like minimize the impact on my body of running, I do. So I just find that like my feet and the rest of me just feel a lot better and survive a lot better. I'm injured less if I run on softer surfaces. I even have now like a treadmill that in my bedroom. Like my apartment is tiny and it's basically like all sports.
Yes.
I'm literally sleeping with my treadmill. And I've got one of these like lever devices, which is like a thing that you attach to the treadmill and like you kind of bungee cord yourself up.
Yes.
So it like allows you to run at less than body weight.
Okay, cool. I mean, I feel like the results speak for themselves, right? You in your Instagram bio, you say that you're an age-defying athlete. So I don't actually know how old you are. You don't have to tell me if you don't want to.
Oh, but, I can tell. I am
how proud, old are you?
I am proudly 45.
Oh my God, that is, I mean, that is kind of age-defying.
I was like, that is old.
That is old. No. But like, I mean, God, you're still competing in at like the highest.
Yeah, it's in. Yeah, it's so crazy. So last year, at the age of 44, I literally had the best season of my life with like 2 70.3 wins, and then as like doing the Lifetime Grand Prix and like all of that, and just like having so much fun. Like it was amazing.
Wow.
This year, not so much, but last year was amazing.
Yeah. Okay. I kind of want to put a pin in that, in that this year versus last year and that kind of thing. Because I think that that's very, very relevant to my personal interests, my selfish podcasting, my secret ulterior motives. But I also like, I personally take so much inspiration from athletes who are successful later in their athletic life. Because I feel like I'm going about it from a very non-traditional way. I sort of retired at like what I think a lot of people would assume would be your peak, like your physical peak.
Yeah.
You know, at 25, I'm like, I was really just getting started, but now I'm like hoping to come back and really hoping for a long runway. So then to hear you like, 44, I'm like, oh God, that's like, I mean, that is so inspirational. To what do you credit that ability to be age-defying?
Well, I think it is honestly a belief that like I am still strong. Like I think it really is a lot of that just not taking in, you know, I see all these athletes around me who are like, they turn 40 and then they're like, oh, it's retirement time. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? Like, I'm not done yet. I think also I didn't go full-time pro until I was 32. And so I got into the sport late. My body isn't as like roughed up as maybe folks who like started in their teens, you know? Yeah. And so I'm just still really hungry. I still really love the sport. I'm not burnt out at all. And there are other athletes around me who are, you know, the same age as I am and still kicking ass. And so it's like inspirational for me to see those folks too, who are like, oh, they're doing it, then I can do it.
Yes.
And I think also I'm just like, as 40s for me has been the like best decade of my life so far, just in terms of like living in the world and being more of like, you know, I don't care what you think of me. I'm going to go and do my thing and just like much more comfortable in my own skin. And so I'm also like the happiest that I've ever been in a lot of ways. And so, I think that plays a huge role too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Just like how I move through the world and how much I enjoy my sports.
Yes, sports. Which we will also get to.
Yeah.
But I feel like the question I want, it's so hard. I love talking to dynamic people like yourself on the podcast. So then I'm like, okay, well, we could follow that thread for an hour and a half, or we could follow this other thread that you just brought up for 3 hours. So I'm like, all right, I don't want to like lose all those nuggets. I want to ask you, speaking of your 40s being so great, when did you come out as non-binary?
I came out as non-binary publicly in early 2020 or late 2019.
Oh, wow.
So it was, it's been really recent, it feels like, even though I would say I first started to like understand my gender a bit better in my early 20s, but I didn't really like have the language. We didn't really see a lot of folks like using other pronouns and like really identifying as non-binary. And so it really was like when I had some time to like reflect on who I was and how I identified, and that I was finally like, yeah, this is me, and this feels really right.
Yes, that was so one of the questions that I had written ahead of the podcast was like, what did it feel like to finally like put it into words? Like you said, you didn't really have the language to describe how you felt per se. It feels like the non-binary contingent has really been gaining like awareness in the last several years. You had the language to describe it. Like, what did it feel like to put that into words?
Yeah. I mean, I think what's happening is that like non-binary folks have always been around. It's just now, like myself, I'm like finding the language and finding the courage to like come out and talk about it. And also to like, you know, if we look at the gravel world, like actually have a space to race.
Here goes those threads again, because I really, really wanted to talk about the gravel world, and I want to talk about you racing in triathlon. I want to come back to that, because I think that I have some things that I want to talk about before we talk about the gravel space.
Yeah, totally. But yeah, your original question of like, how did I feel coming out? It was a really interesting experience of like the timing just was kind of crazy, because I came out at early 2020, and to me, I was just like, I'm tired of feeling like what I consider misgendered. Like, I just want to be in the world as like who I feel authentically. And then the pandemic hit and there was no racing. And so I was in this bubble of like, okay, people want to hear my story. I mean, in part, I think, because there's nothing else going on. It's like, okay, well, we can talk to Rach about like this, like, you know, big thing that they've come out as. And so there was like a lot of momentum through like 2020 and 2021 that allowed me to like have a lot of conversations and learn how to talk about this. And it was really interesting. Like the first podcast that I ever did is probably one of my favorites. I'm not like super articulate, but it was just so like emotional and like heartfelt, and it's just been a really cool experience to like continue with that and just see how it has grown in terms of like just the number of people in all different aspects and all different parts of the world who are coming out and being more open, and just in the world of athletics as well, just seeing how much has happened.
Yeah, it feels like in the last handful of years there's been this exponential surge of, I guess for lack of a better word, like inclusivity.
Yeah.
Just seeing so many non-binary categories and all these teams to get maybe athletes that aren't traditionally catered to, mm-hmm. Into the sport has been so encouraging.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. My coming out really was built off of other folks that I saw like on social media and in the athletic world who were either trans or non-binary who had come out. And so that was really inspiring to me to be like, oh, okay, there are other folks like me. I'm not the only one, because I don't have other like gender queer folks in my life. Like here in Vancouver, it wasn't really a thing around me. And so I felt really weird. But yeah, I think especially in the world of triathlon, it's like, as soon as I came out and it made me realize like why I had felt so out of place when I showed up at start lines in like a binary context. So like when I showed up in the professional women's field and they called us all ladies, why I was like, well, that doesn't feel right.
Right.
To me. And why? Yes. And I couldn't put my finger on really why. And so when I was like, oh, because I'm actually non-binary, then it all made sense.
Okay, so that was something that took a while to like really register with you. Like you weren't connected to a lot of the binary language of athletics, but it took you a while to identify exactly what it was that you weren't connecting with.
Yeah, it was like it's hard to describe. Yeah, it was just like it was this feeling of just feeling like a bit of a freak. And feeling like I should have this connection with these other athletes that I am competing with on a certain level. And I've always been I've wanted to like be an advocate for like women's sport and things like that. And it just didn't feel super authentic to my identity. And so it was like, I still am very passionate about equity in sport. And for women's sports, of course, but it's now I understand like, oh, okay. Because I'm kind of talking about like another category that's not really me,
but yes,
you know, but I still have so much passion for it. And so, yeah, it was like, as soon as I found the words to, and the understanding of like just exactly how I didn't fit in, it made me all of a sudden much more comfortable and much more like able to articulate. Yeah. I think just like how I fit in the world and in the world of sport and in the world of binary sport.
Yes.
And also just like all of these things felt just like a little bit uncomfortable for me. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That is, I feel like what you just said about like how you are passionate about it, but in this kind of like distanced way, mm-hmm. like you're talking about another category that like you're passionate about, but it's not something that, I mean, it's probably how I feel about like how I'm really passionate about the non-binary fields, but it's not something that I can like, I can't relate to the struggle, but I'm like, oh yeah, like, no, I want you all to have your own category. Like that's important, but I'm not like, yeah, I mean, I completely get it, but I think that that is such a helpful perspective for people who are kind of starting to learn more about the non-binary fields and I mean, non-binary people. And actually on that note, before we get too much further into it, it would actually be really great if you could help me with some definitions. So I feel like there's a lot of different language sometimes being used even in the race categories themselves. So like how do you define non-binary and how does it differ from words such as transgender or queer or gender fluid, etc.? You don't have to define all of those, but those are all words that I think people who may be a little bit less immersed in that world, they may not be familiar with.
Yeah. Yeah. So non-binary to me means like anyone who identifies outside of the gender binary. So doesn't identify as like man or woman. It's as simple as that, really. And then how that relates to trans. So often trans is used as like an umbrella term.
Okay.
For anyone who doesn't identify as cisgender. So that's cisgender being like you identify as the sex you were assigned with at birth. Some non-binary people also identify as trans and some don't.
Okay.
So for example, like myself, I'm still like a bit on the fence as to like whether or not I identify as trans, and I'm still processing like why that is and
okay,
not really sure.
Yes.
I am like, to be honest, like I often wonder if it is part of my own transphobia of not feeling super comfortable identifying as trans, especially in the environment, the political environment that we are in now.
Yes.
It's a little bit scary to identify as trans, and like yes. non-binary in a way just feels like kind of like a soft identification in a way. I don't know. This is like the feeling that I get when I talk about it. And so yeah. I think that's really fascinating. I'm just really curious about that in my own world. And then in turn, like genderqueer is like just another term for folks who are kind of experimenting and playing and identifying outside of the binary. It can encompass so much. Just like the word queer can encompass so many different sexualities. Queer is different from genderqueer in that like queer typically is around sexuality. So that's like who you're attracted to, who you want to have sex with, versus like gender identity really has no doesn't say anything about who you're attracted to. All it is like how you see yourself moving through the world.
Yes. And I think that that's a common misconception.
Absolutely.
As far as I'm aware, is that people think that your gender has some sort of pre-programmed
sexuality to it.
As I said that, I think that that may have come out a little bit. That might be a slightly bigger and more controversial topic than I meant for it to be. But really, I was just saying that just because you are non-binary or trans or anything like that does not have any sort of like pre-programmed sexuality that comes along with it.
No, absolutely not. Yeah. 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 And I think it's definitely, they're two concepts that are often conflated. And so I think it is a really important distinction. We're not talking about sexuality here. We're talking about like identity, gender identity. Yes.
Thank you for giving those definitions and also for kind of sharing where you're at right now, because I feel like that's probably very vulnerable, but
yeah.
I really appreciate it. And something that I hope to generate with this podcast is just like an increase in understanding and compassion for the listener, for themselves, and also for the person, for the guest. So, and other people who are listening, I want them to see parts of themselves in the guest and say like, wow, I really appreciate them sharing that. And then I also hope that people will listen and be like, oh, I never thought about it that way. And now I have newfound compassion. And I feel like already what you've shared so far has, I think, really had a good bit of both of those elements. So
amazing.
Thank you.
Yeah.
So you are a non-binary athlete in the sport of triathlon and gravel primarily. Is that correct?
Correct. Yes. Yeah.
Is there something about those disciplines that like has drawn you to them from a inclusivity standpoint? Are triathlon and gravel, maybe one or the other, more inclusive than other disciplines, or do you just happen to really like them and it works out that gravel races are starting to have non-binary categories, etc.?
There is a distinct difference between triathlon and gravel in terms of inclusivity, that is for sure. Okay. I started racing like local gravel races 10 years ago. So before I identified as non-binary, before there were non-binary categories, because that has really only been in the past couple of years. And so I got into sport because I loved the sports to start off with. And then since coming out, it's been really cool to be in the triathlon world and be like speaking with race directors and speaking with federal governing bodies and provincial governing bodies about policies and about including non-binary categories, and seeing the like slow progress that is being made in the world of triathlon. But then with the gravel world, it has just been such a massive like skyrocket in terms of inclusivity. And I mean, from the beginning, I think gravel has been a really inclusive sport, but then to have major race organizations and major races, including non-binary categories, starting in, I think, 2020 or 2021, that it's just now, and it was so dramatic early this year, because like I raced Mid-South and then I did a couple of triathlons and then raced Unbound, of like that juxtaposition of like showing up at a gravel race versus showing up at a triathlon. It's like after racing these triathlons in like, I mean, granted I was in like Utah and Tennessee in the world of triathlon, but then I show up in Kansas for Unbound and it is literally like stepping into this like warm fuzzy blanket of like gravel family and non-binary family, and I'm just like, this is amazing. Like I have never felt like this in sport before, and so, and I think it's really inspiring to try and translate that back into the world of triathlon. It's obviously like a much older sport by a couple of decades. The type of people who are, and like the over, you know, the underlying environment that triathlon has been like very serious and like straight laced. And even as someone who is like tattooed and colorful, showing up at triathlon is like, has been weird. There's definitely more of us now, but it's like,
I fucking love it.
Like it was definitely like definitely stood out when I first started racing.
I bet you turned some heads. I think it's so great.
and then now to have like so many athletes reaching out, who are either triathletes, I mean, particularly triathletes, I think, who are just like, thank you for being out. Like just the, I don't often recognize the impact of like just being out in the world of triathlon makes, and then seeing like USA Triathlon just added like amateur non-binary category to their national championships as of last year. And so it's like big things like that that are happening, and other athletes who are coming out. And so now there's like a larger group of non-binary triathletes out there, and places for them to race. And it really is like, I talk about how there have always been non-binary athletes in triathlon, in any sport. It's just now there is space and a category in some races for people to race. And you've seen that in gravel as well, you know, with like at Unbound, with like first year, it was Abby Robbins as like the only non-binary competitor. And then next year we were like 17.
That is so cool. And God, I mean, if you think about from one year to another, 17xing.
Yeah, right.
The race entry is like, that's a lot.
It's a lot.
And I love to imagine this idea that like there are probably, and this is not exclusive to being non-binary, but I think for like a lot of different groups of people, different identities, there are people who are like, all right, I'd kind of like to pick up a sport. I'm looking to, you know, kind of do something. One of my housemates is like, she's trying to figure out what sport she wants to do now because she needs to exercise.
Yeah.
And, you know, like there are a lot of people who are like trying to find a sport, and I'm hoping that there are non-binary people who are like, well, I don't know. I think I'm going to give gravel a try because there's a place for me, and that place doesn't exist in this other sport that I'm not super familiar with, but you know, something like that. And so I love that idea that like there is this space that is known, and that actually like kind of leads me to one of the questions I wanted to ask you, which was when we met, was actually at Sea Otter in 2022. You were about to compete in the first round of the Lifetime Grand Prix. And we got to kind of chat about that whole process and how the subsequent races after Sea Otter were all adding non-binary categories. Is that correct?
Correct. Yeah.
So, I mean, this is kind of a softball, but like, can you talk about like why it's so important to have a designated non-binary category in those races, and what it felt like to get to race in them, you know, that season for the first time?
Yeah, absolutely. So my experience in racing has been, you know, I talk about even when, you know, signing up for races, like in the registration forms, and you have to check off either that M or that F box. Mm-hmm. And that has always felt weird to me. It's always felt like this doesn't feel right. And so then having like being forced to choose within the binary and then only being recognized within the binary, I've just felt invisible. Mm-hmm. I felt invisible. And especially now coming out, being able to like race in a category, the biggest thing, I didn't realize how much of a weight it was to be competing within the binary until I had that opportunity to race in a non-binary category. And it was such a profound experience of validation and like comfort that it made me realize like what I had been, like the weight that I had kind of been dealing with on the others, like prior to that. Yes. And I still, even before there were non-binary categories, I talk about this experience of the first, it was a local gravel race that like literally on the registration form, all it had was like, you filled in your gender and then you chose, they only had binary races. They had men's and women's races, but you got to choose which race, like check off which race you wanted to be in versus like, I didn't have to identify as a mm-hmm. woman or as female to like be then automatically put in a category. It yes. like gave me the space and I felt really seen and validated. Yeah. And so the having that space to compete, I think is like, it allows non-binary folks to like have that joy, to have that freedom to be, yes. not be forced in a box, to be not be forced into a category or a definition of their gender that feels inauthentic. And it's really powerful. It's really powerful to like have that validity and to have that space. And everyone has a right to participate in sport.
Yes.
And I think that means, yeah, allowing, because our sport is divided by gender, mm-hmm. It's important, I think, to have categories that align with genders outside of cisgender.
I love that. And I think that's part of why gravel seems like it has the potential to be so inclusive, is because it's mass start and really the only category is how the awards are assigned, but otherwise everyone's out there competing with one another. So I love that like inclusive element of gravel racing, and I wish that more events would kind of go along with it. And I know that progress is slow, as you emphasized earlier, within yeah. triathlon.
Yeah.
But I think like hearing you speak about like that weight that you didn't even really realize that you were carrying until you didn't have to carry it anymore, because mm-hmm. you've probably always been carrying it. So it just becomes kind of, you know, it's just part of you. You pick up your briefcase every morning and it's that weight you're carrying. And yeah, I think that gives me like a newfound element of like empathy for what other people are going through, that like you don't always realize, you know, even if you try to be empathetic and compassionate for people, you don't always realize like what other people are going through and why this stuff is important. So I guess like from a broader perspective, not just pertaining to sports, but like what are some of the most common misconceptions that people have about non-binary people that you wish you could I'm shaking them visually. I'm grabbing them by their shoulders and shaking them. But yeah. You know, what are some misconceptions that you wish you could maybe rewrite with people?
Gosh, I've never been asked this question. I mean, I think one of the biggest things that is always that comes up, especially for folks who, that it's like, people are like, there are only two genders, like there are only two sexes. That's it. Man or woman. Like, this is how it's always been. This is like from time immemorial, and which is not true. It is not true. If you look throughout human history, in every culture, there have been people outside of binary genders who have been like,
really?
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Oh, that's so cool.
And it is literally, I want to say, like Victorian era that have like pigeonholed people into like, you need to fit into these two boxes. And you,
which is relatively recent as far as
absolutely, yeah,
mankind goes. Like Victorian era is not that far away.
Yeah.
No. As long as humans have existed.
No. It's like even the whole like pink and blue associated with like boys and girls. Mm-hmm. It's like, I want to say it's like the 40s or 50s.
That tracks. Yeah.
It's just like, and now how ingrained it is. Yes. So I think that's a huge thing, is like understanding that like this has been part of human history since humans have been around. And it's only recently that we have really put people in these boxes. And so, it's been really interesting, like learning about different cultures and learning about different gender classes outside the binary in other cultures that have really opened my eyes to like, okay, this is not something new at all.
It seems like the emphasis on what you were just saying is that like the emphasis on gender in the binary started relatively recently, as we were just saying. But people have been non-binary for a lot longer than that. I'm really just repeating exactly what you just said, but I'm trying to think this out. And for me, I guess this might be a misconception. I'd love it if you told me that if I'm wrong, that I would have assumed that people were more likely to identify as non-binary when there is an increased focus on binary gender categories. But it sounds like even in times prior to being very, very fixated on gender, people were non-binary. Did that make any sense at all?
Like that, are you saying like going to the extreme that we have recently would have like brought more non-binary people to the surface because they were like, is that what you're saying?
Yeah, because it's like, you know, when we're trying to, like the more we're trying to cram people into a box, the more people are going to be like, I'm not vibing with this. Like, this is really, it's really.
I think it's actually the opposite. So I think that, because if you don't see any other options, and if all of your culture is like, you're either here or here, you're either in this box or this box, there's no other box, then it's like when I was younger and I didn't have language, I'm like, I feel weird. Mm-hmm. But I don't know why.
Okay.
I don't see a space for me. Mm-hmm. And I think this is what is really powerful about what's going on right now, that people are, you know, this is often said of like, oh, well now like everybody's wanting to be non-binary, or like everybody's wanting to be this because like it's being like taught in schools, or like, you know, it's this new thing, this new fad. Mm-hmm. But you look at, I mean, I love the example of left-handedness. I don't know if you've heard this before. So
maybe I'd love to hear it again. Yeah.
If we look back in history, people who were left-handed used to be considered like witches, and like it was really like not people were like forced to be right-handed.
Yes.
Left-handed people were forced to be right-handed. And if you look at the timeline, so you had like not a lot of people identifying as left-handed because you were like evil or it was some terrible thing. And once that started to become more acceptable, you see this exponential rise in left-handed people.
Yes.
And it's okay. Not because people just decided to be left-handed. Right?
Right. Like, a left-handed fad is breaking out.
Left-handed, exactly. And it's just like when you see it, I don't know, for me, I'm a really visual person. So like seeing this graph of like, you know, time versus number of people identifying as left-handed and like the impact of like this at this time period, like it became acceptable, more acceptable to be left-handed. It's like a no-brainer. And it's the same thing. It's like, this is why I talk about, like, there are non-binary people already, like, they're already in sport, like, already racing. But they're just like, they're not identified as non-binary because there's no place for them. They have to choose a binary. They have to choose a place to go. And so, And so I think that's another big misconception for sure, is that, like, this is just a fad. Right. It's the same with like queer folk as well. If we look at like history and how many people identified as queer, gay, lesbian, bisexual, whatever, like it's the same thing. The more acceptable it came and the more like okay it was, the increase you saw in people identifying is that not because it was like, oh, I've discovered this new like sexuality. Oh, all of a sudden, oh, maybe I'm attracted to like the same sex. And it's like, no, it's always been like that. It's just been repressed.
I love, and love might be the wrong word, but I have been so fascinated by the stories of queerness throughout history, where it's like, she never married and remained very close with a female friend and they lived together and neither of them ever took a partner and all this, and you're like, whoa, but people have always been straight. Being queer is something new. And it's like, it is like all the stories that you hear. Like, I mean, it's quite sad, obviously, but it's also very, very funny to like, you know, see these historical letters between two men and like, wow, those guys were close. They're a lot closer than most of the male friends that I'm aware of, they long to meet each other again. And so, like I wasn't as familiar with the history of non-binary, but I've definitely seen that represented in queerness throughout history. But I am so thrilled that, I mean, not that I'm not thrilled that I had a misconception, but like what you just told me about, basically, like if I can see it, I can be it. With non-binary is so interesting. And like, I guess that was a misconception that I had. Thank you for sharing that. Like, I'm so jazzed. I feel like I learned something new and like really, I don't know, really great.
Yeah. Amazing.
Are there any other like burning misconceptions?
I think the other thing too is, well, we already talked about like gender and sexuality. So just because someone identifies as non-binary doesn't mean that you can define their sex, like, you know what their sexuality is. So there are definitely non-binary people who are probably heterosexual. And I think that's a common misconception that like everybody who's non-binary is queer or is like, I mean, I can't really say gay because that, to me, that just like infers a binary. But I think another misconception is that non-binary infers a specific gender expression. So often I think people will think, oh, non-binary means like you're like either you're really androgynous. Or because there's a difference between like gender identity, like so how you identify and how you express your gender. So like how you dress, like your mannerisms, things like that. And so they don't always align. Like you can be a cisgendered woman and like to dress in suits or like, you know, I don't know, want to... or like vice versa, like be a cisgendered man and like to wear makeup. It doesn't mean that you're non-binary because like you like the gender expression of what would be considered the opposite. And so I think that's another misconception is like non-binary people are like either like always like quote unquote cross-dressing or like more androgynous, things like that. You know, people, someone can be assigned female at birth, identify as non-binary, and still enjoy dressing super femme.
Okay, can you explain that a little bit more? Because that's definitely a misconception that I've had.
Yeah. Non-binary means different things to different folks. And sometimes it's like, sometimes I feel like a man. Sometimes I feel like a woman.
Yes.
Like, it's not just I feel in between. It can be like, sometimes I identify within the binary, but on both sides of the binary. Or I identify in this like, and want to express myself in the spectrum in between. And so it's really just about like, you just can't make assumptions as to how people identify. I think another misconception is that all non-binary people use they, them pronouns, which is also not true. Like pronouns are like a completely separate thing of like, you know, you could identify, you could, you like, I use they, them pronouns, but I don't use he, she, or I don't use he, she pronouns.
So there are some non-binary people who identify with he and she pronouns?
Yeah. So some people identify as like he, she, them.
Okay.
Or they might identify as like she, they, or he, they.
I've seen that. I have seen he and she, they a lot on Instagram because, you know, people are putting it in their bios now, which is great. So I feel like I'm seeing people's pronouns like way more often than you used to. Okay. That's so I really feel like I'm learning a lot, Rachel.
Thank amazing. You. Yeah. and like how people are like, well, how do I do that? Like, how do I, if someone has like three different pronouns, like how do I use those pronouns? Basically typically you would just like, use all the pronouns. So like it can be tricky sometimes because you're like using different words to describe the same person, but like, you know, you if you're like writing about someone who uses all those different pronouns or talking about them, so that like first sentence you would use they pronouns, second sentence you might use he pronouns, third sentence you might use she pronouns, or just like kind of randomly mixing it up. And so, yeah, I just learned that recently of, because I didn't know. I'm like, how do I do this? And it's like, oh, okay, I gotcha.
We're just cycling through.
You just mix it up. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. Awesome. Gosh, that was all so, like, so informative. I appreciate you so much. Speaking of identity, I kind of want to pivot a little bit, if that's okay. And I want to talk about a couple of other things that identity is like this common thread on This One's For You. And it's obviously like a very broad topic. I do like a nice deep dive of the people that come on the show. So I did just a little bit of lighthearted stalking of you earlier today. and I watched your video, Relentless, which I have to say it was phenomenal. I watched all the videos that were on your website and then some, but especially the ones that were on your website were so good. And the one, the shortest one, Be the One.
Be the One, yeah.
I got chills. It was like so beautiful. But Relentless, just, I feel like I learned so much about you. It was more long format. I will include it in the show notes if you want to watch it, because I would highly recommend it. But I had a couple of questions about how, like, about you as a person. So the one that's probably like the most lighthearted is that you have said in multiple formats that you're a minimalist. And I'm really curious about that because, oh my God, here come the assumptions again. You don't look like a minimalist because your hair is maximalist, if I've ever seen it, and your cycling kit is maximalist, and you have all of these awesome tattoos, and I'm just like, if I was looking at you, I wouldn't be like, oh yeah, I bet they're a minimalist. I saw clips of your house in these videos, and your house is like my dream home. As an aside, is your house a loft?
No. So no. Yeah. I wish. Oh my gosh, I wish. That's like my dream, is to have a loft. No. Yes. So yeah, we're, so that was from the documentary that is like a 20-minute documentary that was made. And no, yeah, those spaces were like other people's spaces.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So, no.
I mean, super cool anyway.
I know. But... I know. It would have been rad.
But you're still a minimalist, and I'm really curious about that. Gosh, what's the word I'm looking for? That contradiction of being a minimalist, but then having these like super bright parts of your personality, because basically what I'm getting at is that I want to be just like you because I want to be a minimalist, but also I need some bright eyeshadow in my life. And, you know, how do I do both?
I definitely. So to me, minimalist means like, I don't, in terms of like the impact that I want to have on the planet and also just like how I want to move through the world in terms of like my own living conditions and like consumption, is that I just, to me, if like I have a lot of clutter around me or if I have a lot of things, it feels like a weight. And I've gone through multiple periods in my life. So even several years ago, earlier in my career, for about 2 years, I lived in a van in Vancouver.
Oh, cool.
And so it was this process of like, I have these existential crises where I'm like, I am too burdened with all of this stuff and I'm like having a hard time connecting with like my purpose in the world and in the universe. And so I'm going to get rid of everything and as much as I can and just like go down to basics. And like, to be honest, it's like, if I could live in a van, like right now, I would do it in a heartbeat, like an absolute heartbeat. However, it's like being a professional triathlete where I am doing three sports and, and now like also doing gravel racing. And so I have like, as you can see, like a lot of bikes. It's like, I have the bikes and, I have like all of the gear and all of the shoes that I need to, compete with. And so it's like, it's a little bit uncomfortable for me to like have these, like there's like little bits where that I have to like, I can't actually be minimalist. It's also just like the nature of my job that I am flying all over the world. But I really try and be mindful about where I am going and where I am traveling. I won't do like multiple trips to like Oceania in a year. It's like, I will really try and like minimize things as much and like condense things as much as I can in that aspect.
Yes.
And even just like how I consume in the world. So I don't like outside of like a bunch of sports things, like I don't really, and sports things and food. I don't really like buy, I don't consume a lot of things.
Yeah.
I'm not like a big fashion person, like going out and buying clothes all the time or like random gadgets and things. It's like, I would really rather just keep like everything as like simple as possible and like not have a lot of stuff. And yes, I spend money on my hair. I do spend money on the colors in my hair, and that is a little secret, not so secret, indulgence of mine for sure. But then like in terms of like color and stuff in my kit, that's just part of me being creative. Like I love expressing myself in that way. I love being colorful. I love just like having really interesting designs in my kit. And so I really appreciate that, as like just part of, how I'm out in the world.
I love that so much, because I don't know if it's like an ADD thing. Like, I know you talked about that earlier, but when I have too much stuff around, and God, as I say this, I'm looking around my room and I'm like, there's too much. And I've been like on the cusp of, I recently did an experiment where I took like half of my clothing. I just put it in a suitcase in the basement. And I'm like, you know what? Deal with that later. See how it feels. And it's so good. But then things start to creep in and you get too much stuff. And it is such a burden. It feels like a burden to me.
Yeah.
And I just want less, but I don't want to be like a minimal person. I just can't have that much stuff around or else I get so overwhelmed.
Exactly.
Like right. I think when I think of peace, I think of exactly as many dishes, like I need as many dishes as necessary to eat one meal, and then you wash them and then they're in the dish rack for the next time you eat a meal. And that's like
exactly
the pinnacle of peace for me, and that's not even close to how I'm living right now. I don't want people to think that like, oh my god, does Ellen have her life together? No, that's not how I'm living right now. But if I were to design the sleepy time bear energy in my life, it would be just enough dishes to eat the meal. Yeah. So I love like you walking that balance, that is inspirational to me.
Yeah. It really feels like, I really feel like when I am done, when I am like past my career as a triathlete and I'm like not doing multiple sports as seriously, that I'm really going to be able to pare my life down a lot.
Yes.
And I'm really looking forward to that. And I think part of what really inspired me as to like how little I really could live with is that I like, oh, how many years ago now? 13 years ago, I left a marriage and moved out of the house and into like a space where I literally took like my backpack, like some clothes.
Whoa,
and that was it. And like everything else was kind of in storage for a while. And it's like, I learned just how little I really needed to, and how comfortable I was just like with not very much, with like, having like a bowl and a fork and a spoon and a knife and a mug. And like, I'm fine with that. And when I lived in a van, I didn't have refrigeration. I didn't have electricity. I didn't have a toilet. You know, and yeah, that was like sometimes quite stressful at times, but you know, it's like, just like realizing, just like learning how little I really needed in my life was inspiring. And so it's kind of what I always strive for.
Yes. Yeah. My boyfriend and I have talked about that. We have a van that we were planning on living in full time, and then kind of life happens. And now, you know, that's a whole story.
Yeah.
But, you know, we talk about like the elements that we love from our long trips in the van and how we can like, what is that? Like, what is it about when we are in the van, or what is it about traveling to a training camp, or what is it about these particular things that we love and that we find so peaceful, and how can we implement that in our day-to-day life at home
to make that's home so great.
As peaceful as a van. And you also have running water. And also like I can record a podcast at home, but I can't record a podcast in the van if you're there, Aiden. So, you know, that kind of stuff. So I love taking those little bits and pieces from different parts of your life and
that's
them together.
That's so great. That's I love that exercise. Yeah, and I think that was one of the things that like when I finally moved back into a space, realizing just like on some level how stressful it was, like figuring out like, okay, where am I going to take a shower today? Where am I going to go to the bathroom? Where am I going to brush my teeth? Living like very publicly in the city in the vehicle can feel like a little invasive. And also just like, I need to take care of my body. So like doing stretches and things like that is like really hard in a tiny space.
Yes.
Especially in the middle of winter when you can't like this park is no longer my living room because it is pouring rain and freezing outside.
Oh my God. We have had that conversation many times where it's like van life in the summer is like, whoa, we just quadrupled our living space outdoors. And then in the winter, you're like, I'm going to freak out. Like, this is so claustrophobic. Like, don't open the door. Or else like the blizzard's gonna come in.
Exactly.
It's different.
Yeah.
Okay. I have one more identity question for you, and I've been so excited to ask you this one, so I don't want to forget. Okay. And isn't that really the main theme of this whole podcast, is not letting me forget what I wanted to ask you? In Relentless, you said that you are a badass. And when you said that, I was like, oh my God, I never hear people say that about themselves. Like, that is so confident and brave, and it's so badass to say that you're a badass. So it's like, you own that part of yourself. Like, the idea of me saying that I'm like cool or good at something is like really scary to me. And you just said it. You're like, yeah, I'm a badass. That's so I want to talk about, like, have you always been confident in yourself enough to say I'm a badass and things like that? Or is that something that you've had to work on? And, you know, kind of why is it important to be able to say that you're a badass when you are a badass?
Oh, man. No, I think that in that video was probably like the one of the first times that I like actually said it out loud in a public yes. manner, you know, and it's yes. like, okay, I guess I'm owning this now. No, I have not had the confidence. I have not had the self-confidence throughout like the majority of my adult life. It is only recently that I have been able to own that. And yeah, I don't as much as out there and like as colorful as I am, I also don't like I don't like talking about like, oh, this is like all of the awesome shit that I've done. And like, yes. I'm like so cool and I'm so amazing. And I am like one of the best athletes in the world. Cause like I've done all of this stuff and like that just doesn't feel authentic to me. And it doesn't
yes.
like, it just like, yeah, makes me want to like curl up in a ball and be like, no. I don't know.
Actually, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just like, no. Well, and I think that I have moved through the world. So if I look at, you know, when like the first tattoos and like body modifications that I got before I was an athlete in my early 20s were all about, and I think how I presented in the world as being like this like punk rock kind of human yeah. that, it really was like this armor that I had moving through the world. And it's like, I had to wear this armor so that I could protect myself, so that I wasn't going to get taken advantage of, or that I wasn't going to experience physical violence mm-hmm. out in the world mm-hmm. as like, or oppression, like just like, no, I'm confident and I'm like this kind of like scary looking person and like, don't mess with me because like I'm a badass. Mm-hmm. And I think I move through the world as someone who like, I do feel really courageous. I feel courageous in like, I like doing extreme things. I like challenging myself. Yes. I have a theme throughout my life of like wanting to like physically challenge myself, which is basically like causing myself pain every day, which is like, to say that out loud is like a description of what your job is like, it's messed up.
I'm actively choosing this every single day.
And I think now, I feel like now I can really own that and be like, yeah, this is how I move through the world. This is how I like love living. I love feeling alive. I love my ADHD brain feeling focused because I'm getting this dopamine from like doing these more like quote unquote extreme things. Like recently I went skydiving for the first time and I was like, oh my goodness. Like I literally have put on my list of like future career, potential careers is like skydive instructor or something like that. I'm like, it's like skydive instructor, motorcycle racer. I'm like, oh my god, this is amazing. Yeah, and just I think then realizing, you know, like going when I first started mountain biking last year, because that's when I started mountain biking. Like realizing that, you know, going out with some friends and realizing like, oh, I have just started doing this and like I feel really comfortable throwing myself down these like technical trails that like most people would be like, oh my goodness, I'm walking my bike over this.
Yes.
And I'm just like, what in me is like allowing me to just like take the brakes off and like just do it. Or like, yeah. And so I'm just realizing as I, yeah, am like starting to do these like more like extreme things, just how comfortable I am and being like, oh, okay, I think that's pretty badass.
That is incredibly badass.
And I'm not like free solo climbing or yeah, things like that, like, or yeah, like wingsuit skydiving, not yet. I mean, it looks really cool.
Leaving the door open, but I haven't done it yet.
Like, I think having a healthy, yeah, just like taking risks. I don't have the extreme risk gene, but I have the like moderate to high risk gene, I'd say.
Damn. I admire you. Kind of scared of you with how, like, that is so much more brave than I am, but like, respect.
Oh, thanks.
It's so cool. Yeah. I mean, I feel like most people wouldn't want to skydive, let alone be like, yeah, I'm actually so into that, I'd like to just do it all the time.
Yeah.
That's pretty badass. Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not saying that you're badass is unjustified. I'm actually saying that it's 100% justified, but I'm so like in awe of the ability to say like, I'm a badass, and I love that confidence. And it's nice to know that you maybe weren't always that way, but have come to be able to own that.
Yeah. It's called being in your 40s, Ellen.
Yes. Oh, I can't wait.
That's what you got to look forward to.
Yes. I've heard really good things about your 40s.
Yeah.
You know, no one's trying to convince me that being in your 20s is fun or easy. So I'm relieved about that because it's confusing.
Yeah.
Gosh, this has been so enjoyable and educational and just inspiring. Rach, I have one last question for you. Who is this episode for?
Oh, I think that this episode is for anyone who is thinking like they need to spend a bit more time, I don't know, reflecting on who they are and how they move through the world. I hope that this conversation, yeah, inspires folks no matter how they identify, no matter what they are doing for a job, no matter like how they spend their money and their time, that it creates a space for, yeah, just like self-reflection and also a level of connection and empathy.
That's so beautiful. How can people learn more about you? I mean, I imagine that they're going to hear that and they'll be like, I have a connection with Rach. I need to learn more about them. Where can people follow you, support you, love on you?
Yeah. Instagram for sure is like where I'm definitely most active. My handle's at Rachel McBride, or at Rachel McB, RACHELMCB. And then my website, I try and keep somewhat up to date, rachelmcbride.com. Yeah. And I'm super responsive. Like, send me a message, send me a comment, ask me any questions. Like, I'm totally here to like have the conversations.
God, I was going to say sports, the sports that you do are so lucky to have you. And just seeing the exponential growth of the non-binary categories in the last couple of years is so encouraging for me. And I know that you literally just being out there, being your authentic self is so inspiring to so many. Thank you for coming on the show. It was such a joy.
Oh, Ellen, it was amazing. And I'm so glad I wore my Ellen Noble super fan t-shirt.
Oh God, I love it so much. Thank you for that. That really that made me so happy.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I you know, my unmarked, my low contrast Rach McBride super supporter t-shirt. We're matching.
I love it.